The reading that I want tonight will all be from the book of Genesis, and initially from chapter 35. Genesis chapter 35. I'll read a number of verses here just to give us the flavor of the chapter, although we'll not be speaking about it all in detail. But verse 1, "And God said unto Jacob, Arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments, and let us arise and go up to Bethel." Verse 6, "So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is Bethel, he and all the people that were with him, and he built there an altar, and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. But Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak, and the name of it was called Alon Bakuth. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Paddan Aram, and blessed him. And God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob, thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he talked with him, and Jacob set up a pillar. Verse 16, they journeyed from Bethel, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrath, and Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, Fear not, thou shalt have this son also. And it came to pass, as her soul was in departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called his name Ben-Jamin. And Rachel died, and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar upon her grave. That is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. And Israel journeyed and spread his tent beyond the tower of Edar. And it came to pass, when Israel dwelt in that land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard it. Now the sons of Jacob were 12. And then we have their names. Verse 27, Jacob came unto Isaac, his father, unto Mamre, unto the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. And the days of Isaac were 84 years, and Isaac gave up the ghost, and died, and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Now I think we should read a verse or two from chapter 49, chapter 48. Chapter 48 and verse 7. Jacob is speaking as a very old man. And as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath, and I buried her there, in the way of Ephrath, the same is Bethlehem. I think we'll maybe just draw the line there, and that will do for our reading from the scriptures. Now, as most will know, it's the intention in the few meetings of this week to take a look at this famous Bible place, Bethlehem, made famous, as we all know, by the events of the New Testament which took place there. But Bethlehem is a place that also features quite widely in the Old Testament as well. And I'll be wanting to follow the course of the history of Bethlehem in different Bible passages. What we will try and do is to focus upon some particular object that is identified either in the village of Bethlehem or in its surrounding environs, And focusing upon that object, we try and learn some straightforward spiritual lessons that might be helpful to us all. Last night in the gospel meeting, we spent a good part of the meeting thinking about a manger at Bethlehem. I suppose there were quite a number of mangers around Bethlehem, being a shepherd village as it was in New Testament times and even in Old Testament times. A manger would not have been an unusual thing. But there was only one manger that became the container for the incarnate Son of God. And there are certainly many things to be learned from that one object lesson. It attracted the attention of angels and shepherds, and it became the initial resting place of God manifest in flesh. So we'll not be covering that again, but the manger that was associated with Bethlehem. Tonight, we'll take a look at a gravestone. Not just in Bethlehem, but this, what we have read in chapter 35 of the book of Genesis, is the Bible's first mention of it. Mentioned by its old Canaanitish name, Ephrath. In fact, most of you would know that there were two Bethlehems in the Bible. There was Bethlehem in Zebulun, away up in the north of the country. And then there was Bethlehem down about 6 miles south of Jerusalem. And it is the Bethlehem that we are thinking about. It wasn't Bethlehem in Zebulun. It was Bethlehem in Ephrath. And indeed, that is why, just incidentally, that is why in the prophecy of Micah chapter 5, is it, when the prophecy, the prediction of the birth of the Lord Jesus is being given, we are told that he would be born in Bethlehem Ephratah. And the Bethlehem is identified so that there could be no mistake. It wasn't Bethlehem in the north, it would be Bethlehem in the south. And with just typical biblical precision, the village is identified by its second name so that there could be no mistake. This is the first mention. We'll stand for a while at a pillar. On the pillar, the name of Rachel will be engraved. The ground around the pillar will be moistened by Jacob's tears. It broke his heart, the death of Rachel. And even hundreds of years later, in the book of Jeremiah, there's still a reference made to this grave where Rachel died and was buried. Rachel weeping for her children. There are people here in this meeting tonight, and maybe somewhere across the countryside, there's a gravestone with your surname on it, or someone that you love. And just like Jacob's pillar, that bereavement and that burial was a marker post in your life. I think it was with him. But we'll come back to say a little bit more about that in 2 or 3 minutes. Tomorrow night, in the will of God, I want to take a look at one of the fields in Bethlehem and the work that went on in the field there. On another night, Wednesday night, all being well, I'll take a look at a threshing floor in Bethlehem. Because not far from the village, there was a threshing floor, and I'll try and describe the geography of that when we come to it. You remember, there's a passage that tells us about a well. There was a well at the gate of the ancient Bethlehem, and we'll have to spend a night seeking to draw some water of refreshment from the well of Bethlehem. And we'll try and finish up if we can, if the Lord permits, on Friday evening. And we'll go into a house, right into the village, a special house, and I hope we'll conclude the meeting's worshipping at the feet of Christ. A manger, a pillar, a field, a threshing floor, a well, and a house. And from these 6 object lessons, maybe we'll be able to learn something for our spiritual benefit. Well, as I say tonight, we're right here in the first mention, the first biblical mention of Bethlehem, and we're here in the life of Jacob. One of the disadvantages of just selecting passages in different parts is that we're taking stories and jumping into stories in the middle, and sometimes it can be a little difficult just to find your bearings. Genesis 35, and we cannot speak upon it at length. It's a very interesting chapter in Jacob's experience. It's a chapter of great movement. Actually, when the chapter begins in verse 1, Jacob is in a place called Shechem. That's roughly, if you can imagine a map of what they call Palestine, that's just about the very middle of the land, just between Mount Ebal and Gerizim, just about the middle of the land. That's where he is. When you get to the end of the chapter, the end of chapter 35, he has come away down to the south of the land. And not only has he moved down, but he has been climbing up. And when you get to the last verses, he's in Hebron. And Hebron was the highest point in the land of Canaan. It was the highest point above sea level. And Genesis 35 is giving us the pilgrimage of this man from Shechem to Hebron. And on the way, he took in two other major places. When he moved from Shechem about 20 miles down, he came to a place called Bethel. 15 miles further south, he came to Bethlehem. And 15 miles further south, he came to Hebron. So we're talking, in the chapter, a journey of somewhere in the region of 50 miles. Now, so much for the geography of it. But just if we could maybe learn a lesson or two, so that we too might make progress, because Genesis chapter 35 is a chapter of great progress. Jacob's getting onto better ground, and he's getting onto higher ground. And it would be a good meeting tonight if each one of us could discover a path that would take us onto better ground, and take us onto higher ground. You see, Shechem in Jacob's life was a place of compromise. And Hebron, this last place that I'm talking about at the end of the chapter, was the place of communion. You know that Mamre or Hebron, old Isaac was living there when Jacob arrived. But that's the place when Abraham was a man of 100, he entertained the Lord beneath the tree and made a feast. It was, I say, that high ground. When Lot was sweltering and slogging it out in the valley of the Jordan, in the stifling heat of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and that region, and when the poor man was being suffocated by the atmosphere of sin down there, Abraham was entertaining God in the rarefied atmosphere of Hebron. Wonder, dear Christian, can I ask you, what level do you live on? Do you live down in the valley of sordid things? Or do we know anything of what we sing about in that hymn in some places? Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. Well, that's what Jacob's doing here. He's going to Hebron, to the place of communion. But he starts off in Shechem. I tell you, it wasn't good. He should never have been there, really. At least he should never have stayed there. I reckon just as hard to, it's hard to sort out all the dates, but he must have been there for something between 7 and 10 years. God had told him, when he left the land away down in Paddan Aram, God told him, he said, Jacob, get back up to Bethel. And right enough, to be fair to old Jacob, he packed his bags in Genesis chapter 31, and he headed back to the land of Canaan. He crossed the Jordan. He spied out some very nice farmland at Shechem, and he bought a piece of ground, and I would say 7 or 8 years later he still hasn't gone to Bethel. And the place that the Lord, he came a long distance, he came away from Paddan Aram, the hundreds of miles down across the Jordan, but he has still stopped quite a number of miles short. You know, it's a thing that we need to watch and be careful about in Christian experience. Very often believers go so far, and it's good, but they reach a place that's comfortable and they don't go any further. Now that's compromise. And delayed obedience or partial obedience can very often be tantamount to disobedience. Now when he was there, well, things didn't turn out. In fact, in the whole of Genesis 34, which is the story of the days at Shechem, as far as I remember, in the whole of Genesis chapter 34, the name of God is not mentioned once. And that's the chapter where Jacob's family was wrecked. And his daughter Dinah was violated by the prince of the Shechemites. And it was a decade of delay. But as far as Jacob was concerned, it was a decade of disaster. Anyway, we can't talk much more about that tonight. I would just say in the meeting, dear Christian, keep pressing on. Go the whole distance. Let us all go the whole distance in the path of God's direction. And again, the word of the Lord comes to him. Despite all the failure and all the disgrace, things went so badly wrong in Jacob's family. He told the boys, he said, my name's stinking. He said, the way you boys have behaved, my name is stinking in this whole area. And yet, the Lord spoke to him again just where we started chapter 35. He says, Jacob, go up to Bethel. Go up to Bethel. So, fair to old Jacob, he told the whole family circle, he said, look, we're going to Bethel. And he said, you know what that means. He said, you'll have to put away the idols and put away all the nonsense and all the paraphernalia, put on clean garments, get yourselves washed. He says, we're going up to Bethel, which is the house of God. I've often wondered, is that why he didn't go sooner? He knew that there were things in his family, and there were things in some of his connections, and there was a bit of baggage about the place, and if I go to Bethel, this baggage doesn't fit. And he thought, I'll go within scraping distance of it, and maybe God will forget about it. I'll go within 20 miles. Almost able to see it sitting dotted on the horizon, but I'll stay short and keep the baggage. And then the disaster happened. He says, look, he says, we have stayed here in the place of compromise long enough. He said, get rid of all the nonsense, get rid of all the trumpery. He said, we are going to battle. And right enough, the old man, whatever, I'll give him this. He seemed to have enough authority in his house that when he said it, they all did put all the rubbish away. And when we get to the middle of the chapter, they get to Bethel. He builds the altar in Bethel that God commanded him to build. God appears in Bethel. He says, Jacob, he said, this is where I met you 30 years ago. He said, I'll bless you. And he said, your name will no more be called Jacob, your name will be called Israel. You'll be a changed man. He said, you have come to the place of total consecration. You left the place of compromise, Shechem. You're now in Bethel, the place of consecration. And God talked with him. And I'll not elaborate upon it, but I will mention it, that when he was there at Bethel, the Lord appeared to Jacob. You know, that's a very precious thing. That's a precious thing. Jacob's now getting the enjoyment of the presence of God as he hadn't enjoyed it for years. You never read about the Lord appearing to him in chapter 30 or 31. They spoke to him, but he didn't appear to him. And even in chapter 32, you remember the story where the man wrestled with Jacob in the shadows of the night. And when it began to clear for the morning, the man said, let me go for the day breaks. He said, Jacob, I don't want to let you see exactly who I am. He said, things between me and you are not clear. And he said, I'm going before daybreak. And it was a night of wrestling, and Jacob was groping in the dark, because Jacob's relationship with God wasn't too clear. God spoke to him, then God wrestled with him. But now Jacob's right down to Bethel, on clean, clear, holy, consecrated ground. And God appears to him and talks with him and gives him a clear manifestation of his presence and reiterates, this is the point that I want to mention because I'll be coming back to draw upon it in a few minutes. He reiterates the promises. He says, Jacob, I'll be with you. I am God Almighty. He said, out of you will flow a great nation. And he said, the King of Nations, kings of nations will come out of your loins. And he said, I'll give you this land and I'll give it to your seed. And just as I was with your grandfather Abraham and your father Isaac, he said, I'll be with you and all that I promised them. He said, I am reaffirming these great promises to you that I'll multiply your seed. Jacob set up a pillar there in Bethel and he poured oil on it and he poured a drink offering upon it. That's the first drink offering in the Bible. You know, I'm sure all of you know, that the pouring out of wine is an expression of joy. You know, Jacob was a happy man. When he poured out that wine libation over that stone, just fresh, in the fullness of his fellowship with God, he was a happy man. Great to hear, to see the face of God clearly. Great to hear the voice of God clearly. Great to be in the warmth of God's presence. Great to be back at the place of first principles. Great again to recapture the early love that he had when he met God at Bethel. Maybe we could do with getting back to those kind of things. At least some of us who were saved a little while ago, we could just do with getting back and getting out of our lives some of the bits and pieces of things that we have collected as the years have gone by and just get back to the place of complete obedience and total consecration. Now, you say, well, that's great, that's great. Left the place of compromise. He's arrived at the place of total consecration. He's still heading for Hebron, the place of rich communion. But just when he leaves Bethel with all its blessing, they're not too far down the road. And the next stopping point on this itinerary of Jacob's is Bethlehem. And the Bible tells us when they were just a little way from Bethlehem, tragedy struck and Rachel died. It's the first record in the Bible of a mother dying in childbirth. Not the last, but it's the first. It was her second son. By the time she died, I think Joseph would have been a fellow maybe just about turning into his teens. Maybe hardly that. Her pride and joy, her only son. There was one day that Rachel, a good deal earlier than this, she said, give me children or I die. Maybe with a little bit of exasperation. The only trouble I see with it is that God took her at her word. And when she got children, she died. She got this, when she had the first son, she called him Joseph. And Joseph means he will add. And what she meant by calling that first boy Joseph was that God would add to her another son. Give me children. She said, if I don't get children, there's no point living. She made it quite a... I don't want to be too hard on her, but all I'll say is this. Do try and be careful. And I need to be careful too. Try and be careful that you don't say outrageous things. If I don't have children, there's no point living. And as soon as she reached the point where she'd have no more children, the Lord just allowed her to die. Sometimes we could say in exasperation, we could maybe say things, and if the Lord took us at our word well, we maybe just wouldn't be as keen. But I'll just leave that. Looking at the thing from Jacob's standpoint, You know, Jacob, as we say in our language, he doted upon Rachel. I think she was a young wife. I couldn't tell you exactly what her age was. But when he set up this pillar just out from Bethlehem, you know, when he's speaking about it on his deathbed, that's why I read in chapter 48, he said, when I was on the way to Ephrath, he said, Rachel died by me. He must have been there. It wasn't that somebody told him that Rachel's dead. He said, she died by me. He likely had to stand and watch her enter into the portals of death. And he said, I was on the way that goeth to Ephrath, and it was but a little way. And I buried Rachel in the way. He said, we never got to the goal. He said, I was on a road, and I seemed to be heading somewhere, and I wanted Rachel to be with me, but he said, we never made it. The journey never reached the goal that we intended. As far as she was concerned, it was truncated by an early death. You know, not everyone gets a long life. Not every relationship is allowed to last. A verse or two here before this, because this is a chapter of, it's not only a chapter of progress. Mind you, that's a thing to learn, dear Christians, just very much in this. Genesis 35 is not only a chapter of progress, but it's a chapter of pain, sickness, bereavement, burial. And yet, through it all, Jacob is pressing on. It's amazing. It's one of the things of life that I certainly do not like. But as I just get one or two extra birthdays and hear about the Lord's people, I'm confronted with it more and more. Dear believers, we don't like it, but in the school of spiritual education, progress usually comes through pain. Through pain. And if we had gone back a verse or two, I think I did read it maybe, although I'm not speaking about it. In verse number 8 it says of this chapter, there's another lady dies. She was Deborah. And she was Rebecca's nurse. Oh boys, I'm really taken back to see her still knocking around. In chapter 35, she was going in chapter 24. And Jacob wasn't even born. She came from Paddan Aram with Rebecca. When the man with the camels brought Rebecca, old Deborah was there as Rebecca's handmaid. That's now over 105 years ago. And if she was coming then as a nurse in chapter 24, just say she was a girl of 25, and thus I guess she could have been 45 for all I know. Say she was a girl of 25 back in chapter 24. 105, she's away about 130 at least. There are some old ladies can last for a long time. She'd been there. But you know, Rachel wasn't anything like that. Nowhere like that. Deborah was very precious to Jacob because she was the link. She was the last living link with his mother's house. Rebecca's nurse. Rachel was precious to Jacob. She was a link with the country of Paddan Aram. And yet, she dies. The ways of God are past finding out. And you might discover, dear Christian, that there'll be something in your life, and you'll have to say like Jacob, it all happened on the way. I can't fully just communicate to you what there is in that expression. He keeps repeating that. It was on the way. It was on the way. It was on the way. He said we were going. But he said, Rachel never got the journey finished. I imagine he likely wanted to bring her to see his father. If she'd only lived another few weeks, he would have had the privilege of introducing her to his old father, because he arrives with him before the end of the chapter. And I'm inclined to think that's what he was saying. We were on the way to see Isaac. And I would have loved that Rachel would have had the privilege of meeting my venerable father, but on the way, she died. There could be some Christian here tonight and you have goals planned. Some of our goals might never be reached. And many a plan can be interrupted just by the very thing that we're speaking about here. In this pillar that Jacob set up, I can see a separation that was marked by pain. I would nearly think, but I couldn't prove it, but you can't help but imagine some of these things. I would nearly think that if Jacob had his way, he would have wanted to bury Rachel in the Machpelah. She never made it. Just the thought of putting his cherished Rachel, the remains of his cherished Rachel, in the same grave chamber where Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah were, and where he himself wanted to be put later on. But they hadn't got right to Machpelah yet. And in the climate of that country, as you know, a burial has to take place very quickly. And he said, we were just there near Bethlehem, and they had to bury her in the way. It was a separation that was marked by pain. But in the middle of it all, I want to think about a son that was named by praise. You know, when Rachel was dying, she had a son. And she saw him, and she had, obviously, the ability to name him. She knew it was going to be a man-child. And she named him Ben-Oni. Now, old Jacob felt free, even with all his respect for Rachel. And it must have been something that he did with a fair wee bit of consideration. Because if she said that with her parting breath, call him Ben-Oni, it would have taken a fair bit of courage on his part to go against what she said. He said, no, we'll not. He said, my beloved Rachel's final wish. He said, we'll not go with it. He said, we'll call him Benjamin. He said, if this boy would get the name of Ben-Oni, the son of sorrow, he said, it would perpetuate the memory of sorrow, and it would be a very negative thing. He said, I'll tell you what we'll do. He said, we look at the brighter side of things. We look at the brighter side of things. And he said, instead of giving him a negative name, we'll give him a positive name, Benjamin. You know that Benjamin was the only son of Jacob's that was born in the promised land. The other 11 had been born outside of the land, and there might be significance in that as well. But Benjamin, you know, the good thing I see about old Jacob here is this, that in a situation that to him was heartbreaking, he still had the faith to see the glint of a rainbow in it. You know, that's a good thing to have, dear Christian. Because sorrows do come. And they come to all of us, and we never know just on what package they may come. But whatever they are, it's good that our faith can rise above the externals and can see the shining of the sun amidst the droppings of the rain and can see the hand of God. He said, God has completed my family here. He said, amidst the tears of this situation, and he said, I've had to say farewell to beloved Rachel. He said, out of death has come life, and out of this bereavement, he said, there has come a birth. And he said, we'll not, no, he said, with all respects to Rachel, he said, we'll not go with the negative name. He says, we'll take the name of hope, the name of gratitude, the name of power, the son of my right hand. You have quite a number of different instances of that throughout the Bible. You know, even, it's maybe not exactly parallel, but you remember even the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 1. It'll at least be a well-known thing that he talks about those men that were preaching. And he says, some of them are preaching with, well, he says, they're not doing it with a good motive. And he said, they know that I'm in bond. And he said, they're preaching and they're doing it hoping to add affliction and anguish to my bonds. He says, they want to pile it onto me. And now that I can't preach, and they know that I'm here hemmed in, he said, they're going at it all the harder to try and increase my aggravation and frustration. And it was a very negative circumstance. And he could have become occupied with it and could really have got... He said, listen. He said, whether they're doing it with the right motive or not, whether it's hurting me or not, he says, forget about that. He says, Christ is being preached. And he says, I rejoice. And therein I do rejoice. Even though I'm suffering. And even though it's going hard with me. He said, if the message of Christ is still being preached, he said, let me rejoice. Dear Christian, there can still be a brighter and a positive side in even the darkest situation. And the faith of old Jacob was able to rise above the prevailing sorrow. But just another thing that I mentioned, very closely connected with that. Not just a separation marked by pain, and a son named in promise. But I'll say a word quickly here about a sorrow softened by promise. You see, that's why I took a minute to go through the chapter, because I need it now. Where was Jacob just before he came to Bethlehem, or on the way to Bethlehem where Rachel died? Well, we have been discovering that he was at Bethel. And when he was at Bethel, he heard the reaffirmation of God's promises. He says, Jacob, I'll go with you. He says, I'll make you the father of a mighty nation. He said, I'll multiply you. He said, I'll bless you. He said, you can leave your future in my hands. And God talked with him. And he just repeated the promises that had been made before. But he repeated them in a fresh way. And I think they came home to Jacob's soul. And he went down the road and Rachel died. You say the promises came just in time, didn't they? He says, God just told me that he would multiply me and that he would bless me. And he said, I go down the road and the family starts to die. He said, Rachel died. Not much sign of multiplication. He said, my mother's nurse, Deborah, has died a little while ago. Now my cherished wife, Rachel, dies. And in the middle of it all, God says, I will multiply. You know, the reason that God gave Jacob that promise was just to fortify him for what was coming. God said, Jacob, I know. He said, I know that 6 miles down the road, he said, you're going to have to set up a pillar. And it will seem as if when you stand beside that lonely pillar, that part, a great part of your hopes for the future are gone. He said, I know that'll be 6 miles down the road. He said, just before you go there, he said, let me tell you again that my promises will never fail. Neither they did. Dear Christian, you need to appreciate that. You know, God often allows people to get prepared and to get fortified and to get ready. Just a fresh appreciation of his promises. Because when the difficulties of life come, the only thing that really stands us in good stead and is a support to our nerves and our emotions is the firm, unchangeable certainties of God's abiding word. So God was fortifying him and God was fitting him for the future. There's another thing that I want to mention just here. At the end of the chapter, maybe before we go to the end of the chapter, a sight marked by a pillar. You know, Jacob was a man of pillars. Some of these younger believers might not have heard any of our brethren, but some of us that have been at ministry meetings for years, we have heard our brethren preach to us greatly on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Abraham's the man with 4 altars. And Isaac is the man with 4 wells. And Jacob is the man with 4 pillars. And that is all very true. And I cannot speak at length upon Jacob's pillars. You know, the first pillar that Jacob set up, I just mentioned them and raced through them quickly. The first pillar that Jacob set up was in chapter 28. And I'll call it, I think it was his conversion. And the setting up of a pillar in Bible times It very often was just a marker. Something that you wanted to go back to. Something that you wanted to be able to locate and pinpoint on the journey of life. Something that you didn't want to have forgotten. And you set up a pillar just to mark the place. You know, in each one of our experiences there are landmarks. And Jacob's first landmark was just this place, Bethel. He said, that's where God met me. That's where it all started. I know there are quite a number in the meeting tonight, and you can go back to that landmark. Can I ever forget the joy of that blessed meeting place? It's a great thing to go back to the night or day or whatever when you got saved. And your connection with heaven in that spiritual sense first began. Thank God for the landmark of salvation. Then you remember the day that he separated from Laban. He got into some doubtful deals with Laban, and Laban was quite a character to tangle with. But there was a day when Jacob said, look, I know more of this. He said, I'm breaking off from all this. He said, no more of this wheeling and dealing. And he said, you and I are finished. And he put up a pillar. That was not the pillar of salvation. That's the pillar of separation. He says, finished with all that kind of life. Then, when he comes back to Bethel that I was talking about a minute ago in chapter 35, he sets up another pillar. When God meets him again and reaffirms these promises, you know, there are times, I suppose I could speak to some of these Christians, there are times for you when God, maybe it was a conference, maybe a Bible reading, maybe some time in your own personal reading of the Scriptures when God came close to your soul and you heard the voice of God in a special way. Not conversion. I'm talking about things that happened since conversion. Here was a second visit to Bethel. And Jacob said, when I got that message to get to Bethel, he said, I had to clear away the things that I just mentioned. And he set up a pillar, poured the oil and the wine, the pillar of sanctification. And now we've got this fourth pillar that he sets up for Rachel's grave, the pillar of sorrow. And had to learn that in your pilgrimage with God, sometimes the things that are dearest to you are taken from you and you're just left with nothing but God himself. You know, not only did Deborah die and Rachel die in this chapter, but before you get to the end of the chapter, old Isaac will die. You say the whole thing's going. The whole thing's going. Oh, Jacob, you'll not have a connection left, Jacob. The old generation is passing away, and even some of the young generation are beginning to pass away. That happens, dear brethren and sisters. And you know, there are times that we go to a grave, and you so feel the miss of the person that's buried. When you get away from the grave, the only thing you can do is get down on your knee and cry to God. Get closer to God. And I think that's what happened to Jacob here, with all these graves and the world becoming a lonelier place to him. It drove him closer into the presence of God. Now I have a sadder side of things just to mention for a minute or two here. You see, we would maybe think that if you're doing what's right, and if you're right with the Lord, and if you put away everything from your life that you know about that displeases him, and if you get back to Bethel and back to first principles and listen to his word and worship him as Jacob did, if you get like that, everything will run smooth. Well, I've already mentioned, but I want to mention it again and then come to another difficulty. Jacob was no sooner back to Bethel than this blow of bereavement struck. He was in the right place, and he was in a good, better condition than he had been for years. You know, sometimes we can be beguiled into thinking that if I was really close to the Lord, my life would be trouble-free. I would have no burden. I would have no family problems. I would have none of these funeral tears, and these different things that you've been talking about, if I wouldn't know, Jacob got these thick and heavy just after he got back to Bethel. So being close to the Lord doesn't guarantee that not only Rachel died, but just down the road, Reuben went in and took advantage of the situation, and he had a relationship with Rachel's concubine and committed incest. And the Bible tells us that Israel or Jacob heard about it. Now, that was adding insult to injury. It was bad enough for this man to say farewell to his wife, but to see his firstborn son get involved in carnality and corruption and to debase and disgrace the family name, well, it was a heartbreak to the old man. Now, I think, and I just don't want to go into it all just in a public meeting like this, but the whole thing is just a sorry mess. First of all, I doubt there shouldn't have been a concubine, but even leaving that for a start, I think that Reuben going in to do what he did, he was trying to assert himself in the family. And by taking the dead woman's concubine, he was trying to establish some degree of primacy over the whole family, because he was a son of Leah, as you know. And there was a division in Jacob's family, and he wasn't always wise with favoritism and so on. Mind you, that causes problems, dear Brennan. I'm a boy to be telling people how to sort out their family things, but Jacob reaped an awful harvest of sorrow because he gave more favors to one part of the family than the other. You need to be very careful about that. But anyway, I'm talking now about Reuben. Reuben overstepping the mark. And imagine taking advantage of Rachel's death, hardly cold in the grave, and old Jacob still broken hearted with the bereavement, and this prodigal rascal Reuben takes advantage of Rachel's absence and takes advantage of his father's sorrow, and he tries to carve out a special position for himself at the expense of other people's feelings. Well, all I say about that is this. Jacob didn't seem to say much about it at the time. But you see, about 40 years later, when old Jacob was dying, he said, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, the excellency of my strength, unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel. He said, you went up and defied your father's couch. He said, you see what you did, son? He said, you thought by your crafty, carnal move that you would climb up the ladder in the family, that you would rise higher in the stakes, that you would take pride of position by the move that you made. He said, I want to tell you, you'll not excel. You've lost everything. You've lost the birthright. You've lost the leadership. He said, it will be going to another one of these boys. And he said, a man like you with unbridled passion, and he said, with uncontrolled lust, he said, I'm afraid you're not fit for leadership. And mind you, there are very, very solemn and very, very serious lessons to be learned there. And Jacob would never forget the day that he put up the pillar at the grave. Put up the pillar. And it wasn't far from that pillar that his oldest son, Reuben, took advantage of the situation. Let us beware. Let us be careful. Never take advantage of another person's weakness. Never wait until somebody makes a slip and you dive in for the kill. I tell you, it's a very cowardly, carnal thing to do when anybody has to act like that. Just, I'll conclude the meeting. And just after Jacob set up a pillar in verse 20 of the chapter, Jacob set a pillar upon her grave. That is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. And then in the next verse, verse 21, you read, and Israel journeyed. It's the first time in the story of the narrative that Jacob is described by his new name, Israel. Now, previously God has told him, your name's going to be Israel. And it's no longer Jacob. He has told him that a couple of times. But there still seems to be a fair old bit of the Jacob working its way in him. But this is the first time. The first time that using his new name, it says Israel journeyed. And as I said at the beginning of the meeting, he's heading down south. The last 15 miles towards Hebron, where his father is. Israel journey, not Jacob. Israel. This is the man that's a prince with God. I don't want to say this glibly, but I would say, he went on. You know, sometimes we have farewells and funerals that we don't like. But you have to go on. He didn't stay. And he didn't go back and visit that pillar every day. Oh, he talked about it when he was dying. It never got out of his heart. But he said, I have heard the promises of God. 15 miles up this road that has turned out to be a very bumpy road, he said, God spoke to me and he strengthened me for this journey. And he said, in the strength of his promises, I'm going to go on. And go on he did. And he never stopped until he reached Hebron, where Isaac, his father, dwelt. Maybe there's a Christian in the meeting tonight and you're just about to give up. You have been buffeted with the negative circumstances of life in a way that I have known nothing about. And if I have spoken about it glibly, you please give me a big pardon. If you are going through trials to which I'm a stranger. But can I say this? Whatever your circumstances might be, whatever pillar you might have erected, you know, maybe I know a number of people, I'm not just talking now about graves and that, we'll not be back amongst the tombs, we'll be moving on as well. But I know quite a number of people, and mind you, they have set up a pillar or two in 2008. A pillar like this one, a pillar of sorrow. And things have happened. And they wonder how they'll ever get themselves gathered again. But can I say to you, as I conclude the meeting, be like Jacob if you can. Stand upon the promises of God. You know, it tells us just after this, just where I stopped reading there, that he journeyed. You get a list of the 12 sons of Jacob. And you say, I can't understand that. You say, that's a thing that really baffles me. You're reading through a story of the Bible, and you seem to be getting on nicely, and then the next thing, you get a whole pile of names. And it's just, it seems to be a genealogy juts in out of nowhere, and there's no connection. And here you have it. We've already had their names earlier on. And we're going to get their names before the book ends. Why do you need all the names of the sons of Jacob here again? And they're actually counted. Rachel has died. Reuben has made a fool of himself. Disgraced the family. And yet Jacob is pressing on. And it says, these are the sons of Jacob. 12. Out of nowhere. And then it goes on and finishes the story. Why is that story just put in there just like that? Simply to show us this. Family bereavements, number one, yes. They are there. Family breakdowns, number two. They are there. But God's purpose and God's promise never fails. What God has in mind still is reached. Past all the pillars. Through all the valleys, after all the disappointments, and after all the disgraces, God's plan is still in target. Dear Christian, you mightn't know where it's going. You mightn't be able to see the end of the journey. You might be a little bit baffled and bewildered by the twists and turns and the contours of the path. Can I encourage you, just, I hope I can, with this. Be like Jacob. Press on. Lift your head. Strengthen your heart. Put your trust in God. His promises will ripen fast. Unfolding every hour. The bud may bitter be to taste, but sweet will be the flower. I trust that our visit, maybe a rather unusual visit, you'll not be out it very often, I wouldn't advise you to go, but you know, they tell me actually that Rachel's tomb is the third most visited place in Palestine. In fact, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, or spoil it at the end of the meeting. The place that they say is Rachel's tomb, I would doubt if it's at the tomb. But that's beside the point. There's quite a geographical difficulty. I'm not interested in the geography of it tonight. But I hope that our visit, we'll at least have learnt one or two lessons that might help us on the pilgrimage of life. And tomorrow night, all being well, we'll leave the pillar and we'll go to the field and try and learn a different set of principle. Shall we pray? Our Father, we commend to thee thy precious word. We thank thee for all that thou art doing in our lives. We thank thee for the texture of thy providence that brings together combinations of events that we would never anticipate. And we know that thou art outworking a purpose according to the wisdom of thine own eternal counsel. We thank thee that we are here upon earth and we are only at a midpoint of what thou art doing. We pray that thou wilt enable us to be like Jacob, to go from place to place, to take our pilgrimage, to put our trust in thine unfailing promises, and to see amidst the sorrows and the setbacks of life, to see the unfolding plan which thou dost have in mind. Help us in these matters as we sing our closing hymn and we seek preservation on our homeward journey, and give to thee our thanks in the Lord Jesus' precious name. Amen. Just a verse I think will do. Of 209, take the world, but give me Jesus. But we'll only be singing verse 3, take the world, and so on. Then throughout my pilgrim journey, night will cheer me all the while. Verse 3 and the chorus of 209, we might stand to sing and the meeting is over.